So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello. Before we get started, a quick announcement. We're going to be in Scotland next week covering the Edinburgh International Television Festival. And we can only do that because of people like you. Thank you, everyone, who's taken out a voluntary subscription to this show. You're the reason we can go to places and cover events. Join our supporters. Go to themediapodcast.com and support this independent media podcast. Also, big thanks as well to Media Masters, who are sponsoring this edition of the programme. You'll find out who's on their show this week later. Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. On today's show, what does the rise of Lad Bible say about online viewing? Are view counts as reliable as they should be? Less than a week before the TV festival, we pick our top sessions and weigh up our expectations for the keynote by Vice's Shane Smith. Plus, with the exit of head Emma Swain, we assess the state of BBC Factual. Someone's bought troubled Gawker Media. We'll explain who and why. And in the media quiz, we rescue three stories from Linear Armageddon. That's all to come on today's Media Podcast. And joining me at the Hospital Club this morning, it's the deputy editor of metro.co.uk, Alex Hudson. Hello, Alex.
Good morning.
What have you been up to?
This morning, I interviewed a horse whisperer whose first words were, "I'm not really a horse whisperer, the PR just made me say that."
So irritating when they do that, isn't it? It's like Paul McCartney's son. He's like, "Yeah, I just don't want to talk about my dad, if that's okay." It's like, that's why you're here!
She was lovely and really interesting, but she's like, "No, I train horses and communicate with them, and, you know, we hang out and we roam wild." But as far as the film The Horse Whisperer or any of that, it wasn't quite the tabloid sensation that I was hoping for.
Yeah. I once went to interview a witch in Glastonbury, and that was the basis for the whole feature. And then she said, "Yeah, I'm not really a witch, I just sell herbs." Also joining us, pertinently for this time of the year, is the director of the Edinburgh International Television Festival and former editor of Broadcast Magazine. It's Lisa Campbell. Hello, Lisa.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the show. Less than a week to go. I imagine you might be a bit busy.
I'm still standing, just...
Is this the time, basically, your phone's just constantly ringing with people saying, "Yeah, I can't make that session, and can we move this?" And
not too bad at the moment on that front, but, yeah, it's probably likely to happen. But, yeah, no, it's all good. I'm really excited.
I'm excited to be going to Edinburgh, and you listeners should be very excited as well. We're going to bring you an extra special edition of the Media Podcast between our fortnightly editions next week as we venture up to Edinburgh as well. More on that later. But first, let's talk about what most people are talking about in the country at the moment, what they're watching at home. The Olympics. What do we make of the BBC coverage thus far?
John Inverdale. John Inverdale is my favourite person for just how terrible he is at his very casual sexist comments that are now finally being called out. He's done it at Wimbledon, he's done it at the rowing, and now he's done it during the tennis when he said to Andy Murray, "Oh, you've won 2 gold medals, you're the first person to do that." And Andy Murray just replied, Yeah, you know the Williams sisters with all of their medals just happen to not just forget the fact that there are women playing the sport as well.
Yeah, and the spats between him and Steve Redgrave are just classic, aren't they?
But in Venice the Man, he's presenting a live TV broadcast, and, you know, sometimes your brain plays tricks and he's excited, he's talking to Andy Murray just as he steps off the tennis court. I know that's his job, but
yeah,
he
we
must
can
have...
forgive the odd faux pas, but it's just constant, really.
He does it again and again, and bless him. Like it's
bless him.
No, it's what he thinks. It is what it's a sort of mindset that he is in, and it's not sexism, and it's outward pushing things out to, you know. So it's everyday sexism is the term that's used, and it's, you know, it's not as horrible as some sexism that goes on, but it's as prevalent, if not more prevalent, than any other sexism of just forgetting that women exist. You know, you have football and you have women's football. You have athletics and you have women's athletics. And if you play into that, and if you hire presenters who engage in that philosophy, then you keep having sport and women's sport rather than just sport.
Did you see the story today about the Egyptian state broadcaster telling 8 of its female TV hosts that they need to go on a diet? They've got a month to lose weight to get an appropriate appearance for TV.
Okay, but let's just step down off our high worthy pommel horses for a second. Let's all celebrate Claire Balding. We can all agree on that, right? She's great.
Yes, she is lovely.
She's great. And what about the business of, thanks for joining us on BBC One, now we're going to BBC Two, and then you turn on BBC Two and it says, thanks for joining us on BBC One. I mean, it's a bit of a painful sort of rearranging of all the schedules, isn't it?
It is. To be honest, I'm watching most of it on iPlayer. I think that's absolutely brilliant. It's so easy and accessible. You can find exactly what you want at the point you want. It's so user-friendly. It was brilliant the last time around in 2012, and it's better this time. So hats off to the BBC for the digital coverage, absolutely.
Yeah, they have been doing that very well. Especially the Greco-Roman wrestling. I got into that last time around because it was the only thing I could get a ticket for. Now I'm a big fan.
More so than ever before, there is more viral things. There are people using their penises to fail at the pole vault. There is that bloke who spent about half an hour on Twitter bigging himself up in the hurdles and fell, like quite literally fell at the first hurdle and went straight through, and you just run videos of that, and of course it's beautiful because no one's up at whatever time that's on, but in the morning everyone's like, okay, what stupid thing happened yesterday?
And the cycling's been amazing, and that guy who sits at the front of the race on that bike and just leads them and does nothing. He's like a guy on a moped looking for the pizza delivery. It's like,
leads
anyone
them and does
pizza?
Nothing. Yeah. I presume this is a man that's spent probably a decade training at cycling.
I won that job though. It looks really, really relaxing.
Okay, well good. You've lined up your next gig in case the firefighting doesn't go well. Let's move on to one of the big viral stories of the week, because Facebook's algorithms have made some big content providers, from BuzzFeed to Upworthy. Well, now LadBible has joined them. Reportedly, Press Gazette says the site is the most watched video provider in the whole of Europe. Alex, that's a big claim. Is it true?
I have a feeling that producer Matt is going to extensively edit this rant because it's going to be long. So, firstly, the research is by Tubular Labs, who are in partnership, working on a content partnership with LadBible. It's a single source research from a company whose job it is to make LadBible look better.
Okay.
Also, viewing figures for video online is complete nonsense. Facebook in the back end gives you two different viewing statistics, a 3-second view and a 10-second view. That could be on a 10-minute, 1-hour, 3-hour video. If you've watched it for 3 seconds, it counts as a view. If you've watched it for 10 seconds, it counts as a view. LadBible are including Vine loops in what this viewing count accounts for. I can't imagine Walt Disney are, to be honest. Albeit that LadBible are, what, 500 million views bigger, apparently, according to Tubular Labs. Is, you know, at what point is a view a view? If you talk about a podcast listen, you generally listen to the whole thing. If you are listening to a 30-second clip of the podcast, does that count as if you listen to the entire podcast? If you have watched a video...
If our advertisers are listening, then yes, it does. But I take your point.
You know, LadBible is the most watched video provider in Europe. At what point has it affected the most change, or at what point has it been the most engaging video? So one of the most popular Facebook Lives on the internet is LadBible's video of ice cream melting. It's funny, it's hilarious, it's fascinating, it's not changed. It's not journalism, I'm sure we'll come onto that later with Gorka, but...
And when you say Facebook Lives, because to the uninitiated, you know, a lot of people have heard of Facebook Live, but frankly can't be asked to watch a live stream on Facebook. you're saying one of the most popular Facebook Lives retrospectively. So it's live when it's made, but then people do go back and watch it like a YouTube video.
People do go back and watch it, but I think the thing with that we're finding increasingly with Facebook Live is it has to be something to be seen then to be exciting. So we're running competitions, in fact, this very afternoon. Go to metro.co.uk on Facebook.
And every view counts as a view.
And you can win some good stuff. But it's things that need to be seen live. So Lad Babble have tried it with ice cream. They've tried it with... They super glued a pound coin to the floor and just left a camera on it. BuzzFeed spent an hour and a half adding rubber bands to a watermelon until it exploded. Elite Daily has gaffer taped a man up to a wall until it stuck him to the wall and they removed the chair from under him. This is what people are consuming of Facebook Live.
And it's not the stuff that's going to lose David Attenborough any sleep, is it, really?
It's not, but I think there's so... I've been on this podcast before saying that when Periscope first came out, that this changes how stories are produced, which thank goodness Facebook stepped in to make make live video more practical. But what it does do is it Facebook is willing to add views to a thing. It's YouTube views, it's 50% completion rate. Facebook, it's 3 seconds
okay.
completion.
I'm going to live edit this rant. Stop there for a second. we'll come back to Lad Bible itself as a brand, but just on the point then about Facebook video views and whether a 3 second counts or a 10 second counts. Lisa, that is actually a really relevant point these days, isn't it?
It is. It's completely valid. And we've had lots of these conversations when we've been planning Edinburgh, actually, about, well, whether it's the speakers that we should be having and the kind of debates we're having. And it's a concern for everyone that there isn't an effective measurement system that we can all rely on and we can't trust the figures. And I think absolutely right to say we can question this report completely. I think it's great marketing from Lad Bible, though. I do feel that they feel like they're everywhere. They're very talked about. The way that they are targeting this fickle audience, and they seem to have captured so many, and the way they divide it up with the different brands, Lad Bible, Sport Bible, Gaming Bible. I'll probably be able to talk about it more knowledgeably after Edinburgh, because we've got a session called What Men Want, and it's looking exactly at this, what do these viewers want? Because interestingly, male viewers to advertisers are worth almost twice as much as female viewers. So they're a really lucrative audience and they're actually quite difficult to target. So I think there's lessons to be learnt from Lad Bible about how they do it and how some of the online platforms are doing it. We're going to be showing some interesting research from Channel 4 on that. And there are some real surprises there. You know, it's not just Nazis and sharks that guys want to watch. So I think there's some fascinating stuff to look at in this particular genre of male viewing as well.
Yeah, but it's particularly in the case of Lad Bible, isn't it, Alex? What young men want as opposed to what men want, because probably I'm guessing, you know, the 50-something man is still into the Nazis and the sharks. Young men, it seems from the kind of videos you're describing, actually what they want is slightly ironized, flippant nonsense.
I think the one thing that Lad Bible has done very well is they've created a brand where people can submit, so their user-generated content thing is as good if not better than anyone else. So, and they've got a very good business model where they sell and franchise those videos out to other organizations, and what they've done is they've harnessed that community. If you look at joe.co.uk, which is a sort of new upstarting, its tagline is for men, not lads. So it's deliberately going straight for the Lad Bible audience of the slightly more intelligent or slightly more middle class audience. But it's, as you say, the advertising revenue is there and it's hard to reach, but slowly the internet is understanding how the male audience works, and Lad Bible have done it better. Like the people who run Lad Bible and Sport Bible and every other Bible are incredibly gifted at what they do. They know how to target an audience, they know how to hit it. It's just, what resonance does that have? So if you think half an hour after watching something, does it stick with you? And I think that's the question that they're trying to answer, and they're doing a good job at starting that answer, but they haven't answered it yet.
Okay, and one final point on this digital story. We've got something about the Telegraph coming up next, so old media fans, don't worry, you are being catered for as ever. But one final question on this, Lisa. When you look at these kinds of Facebook numbers coming in, whether you question how the figures are constructed or not, do you think traditional broadcasters that aren't thinking about how their content works on Facebook are just being foolish?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why we've got Vice CEO Shane Smith delivering the McTaggart lecture this year. It's about disrupting the media landscape and how sustainable is it? You know, are they sort of flashing the pan or otherwise? And you know, Shane Smith is going to be hugely provocative. There may well be lessons to learn about targeting elusive millennials, but we're going to be grilling him the following day in the post-McTaggart with Jay Hunt from Channel 4. And I think that'll be really fascinating to hear old media essentially come head-to-head with the new media and how sustainable and viable this model is, the business model or their branded content, like Lad Bible, the branded content, the way that is integrated with editorial and the audience don't seem to mind. I mean, that's something that obviously the rules are different on broadcast TV, but it's something that we just haven't cracked.
Okay, thanks for that. And listeners, don't worry. I too have observed that she's using every answer to plug the TV festival. I'm not going to let
relevant.
Her plug the same session twice. So by the end of the show, you'll have gone through the whole schedule. Right, let's move on to the next story. The Guardian are reporting that independent owner Evgeny Lebedev, I met him once, nice guy, good shoes, attempted to buy The Telegraph from the Barclay brothers earlier this year. Now, he was one of two potential buyers sniffing around, the other being a consortium led by Richard Addis, former editor of The Express. Now, Alex, this story would have happened chronologically at exactly the same time that the independent newspaper was being closed. So on the one hand, the Lebedevs are saying, print's dead, and on the other hand, here's a couple of hundred million or so for the Telegraph. Why do you think they wanted the Telegraph?
Because there is a much, much louder voice. The Telegraph always has had and always will have a much louder voice to the communities that the Lebedevs want to reach. If you look at the political classes, if you look at particularly the Conservative Party and how you influence those sorts of people, the Telegraph is much louder in those circles. The Independent is younger, it's not steeped in history as the Telegraph is, and that's why it's still worth the money. And you are still selling newspapers. The Telegraph's audience are older, they are richer, and there is still that heritage of physical newspaper. It won't last because, you know, physical paper, it will die. But there is still another 10, 15 years of that paper existing in paper form. And with the innovations that the Telegraph digitally are doing, at trying to target that same market, it's difficult because an older market are more difficult to reach, but it's going through a lot of change that is probably going to make Telegraph worth a lot of money.
Yeah, what's your take on that? I mean, I'm aware you work for a competitor, but looking at the Telegraph site, do you see them as a serious competitor? It seems to me their digital presence is much improved in the last year or so.
It's much improved, but we're going for different markets. So Telegraph still swings older, and I think there's a lot to be said about what Deloitte did when they came in and worked out which staff were worth the money they were worth, and they got rid of the people who were said to be not worth any money. I can't talk much more about that because...
You're about to employ some of them?
No, once again, not talking about that either. So
I bet he is. There's a couple of those journalists I'd employ if I was you, so I don't blame you.
But no, I think with the people they chose to get rid of, there were some interesting choices in there. There were people who were relatively, without mentioning any names deliberately, there were people who were relatively big on social media who had a presence and the term personal brand around themselves that means they're very employable elsewhere. So why would the Telegraph get rid of them at a time when it's trying to skew to a younger market, and that's where those people were?
And morale's still pretty low there. More job cuts to come, 7 editors in the last 12 years.
I don't think it's just there. I think there are relatively few publishers where there aren't job cuts being made. I think happily Metro.co.uk at the moment, like crossing fingers, is one of those places. But if you look at The Independent and the way The Independent is going, if you look at The Telegraph, the way The Telegraph is going, The Times doesn't quite know where it is yet. And journalism still doesn't have a business model online. So saying that with genuinely sort of a slight flutter in my stomach was there of, we need to work very hard at making it financially sustainable because we haven't yet.
Let's talk about another property of Lebedev's that he does actually own, The Independent. They've come under fire this week after dropping an opinion piece which was critical of the Turkish president for fear of reprisals against its reporter. Alex, what happened exactly?
There was a piece comparing the work in Turkey to the Third Reich. And that's quite a strong line. Reading through the article, it's not the most thoroughly researched, but they put it out there. And it depends on which version of the story you believe as to whether Turkey actually put pressure on The Independent to make it vanish, or whether The Independent just feared for the life of one of their reporters who was out there. So it's tricky to gauge. So Turkey were very clear in saying they did not put any pressure, but they're kind of okay that it's gone now. And The Independent were very, very keen to say they don't want their journalists being killed. And, you know, he's the Turkish Prime Minister.
Erdogan, yeah.
He's got a thorough history of not being that kind to journalists.
It's sort of difficult for us to comment because we don't really know how serious the death threat is. And, I mean, you can only imagine that they've taken it this seriously to take an article down, which goes against everything The Independent stands for. It goes against its entire track record. So they must have really serious concerns about the life of this reporter, I think, to have done this. And I think it's absolutely vital that these stories are still written, because if the foreign press aren't covering this, with the media crackdown that's been taking place in Turkey, well, we'll never know. We'll never get the facts. I mean, it's, you know, 45 newspapers, 29 publishing houses, 23 radio stations, 16 TV channels, etc., have closed, according to the International Federation of Journalists. So, I mean, it's a hugely worrying crackdown on free speech.
And also, Alex, it hints at a couple of issues with digital publishing, doesn't it? One, that people might associate, just because they're under the same brand, the opinions of one journalist in an opinion piece with the brand itself and other journalists representing that brand. And two, if you publish something online, it never dies. It's not the same as in the old days when it would be in that day's newspaper and 5 months later everyone would have forgotten that you wrote it.
That's entirely true. The second that you've published it, even if you take it down, it gets read more by more people in more countries, in more places, for the exact reason that what was it in this piece that made it get taken down. And I think I see it from both sides. So 2 years ago, before I was an editor, why on earth would you take anything down? I'm reporting things which need to be reported. I'm giving my opinions. It is vital that my voice is heard. I was very gung-ho about it. And now, coming back as like an editor, you're like, if one of my journalists got killed because of my editorial choices, fuck. Like, at what point do you actually put human life before journalism? I'm still very gung-ho and like, journalism comes first, the story. And there is so much in that Turkey story, so much that we don't know. There are so many conspiracy theories and so many different variants of how that coup happened, exactly the mechanics of how that coup worked, that foreign newspapers, because Turkey doesn't have a free press anymore at all. I think The Independent, I forget the quote, but The Independent said it themselves, that the foreign newspaper has to put it into account. And if you're being given a platform by a newspaper, you are the voice of the entire newspaper. Think about the amount of stick Owen Jones gets for being so Guardian. Think about the amount of stick The Guardian gets for being so Owen Jones. It works in both ways.
Well, and this is the point, Lisa, about the other journalists at The Guardian who aren't Owen Jones, isn't it? I mean, it is difficult. You will get seen that way. You know, you think about poor reporters who are doing their best to provide genuinely fair and balanced coverage for Fox News, but they're going out there with a Fox News mic. Everyone's going to assume they're rabid Trump supporters.
There's such an appetite, though, isn't there, for the personalities in the media? And that's the content that's shared, isn't it? You know, very strong opinion, real polemic. This sort of impartial sitting on the fence stuff just doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't hit home. So I think it's all, you know, kind of clickbait comes into it too.
More media news in just a tick, but first let's take a break to find out who is on Media Masters this week with Paul Blanchard.
It's Chris Wright.
Right. It's Chrysalis founder Chris Wright, who launched the careers of Blondie and Spandau Ballet and founded Heart Radio. Let's hear a taster.
I would have sold the radio business a bit before we did. We sat around the board table. The guy that was running the radio division said it was worth 400 million. I thought, well, you know, he's crazy. It's not anything like that. If we could get 400 million, it would be like the sale of the century. I think the froth was coming off the top. And we were trying to buy other radio station operators, and we couldn't. We knew we needed to get bigger. We were trying to buy other stations. We couldn't buy them. If we couldn't get bigger, we knew we'd be squeezed by the two biggest operators, and we had to consider the fact that we would sell it.
Chris Wright there. You can hear all the Media Masters interviews for free on the Media Focus podcast. I'd highly recommend the Jeremy Vine one. If you want to be a presenter, it's essential listening. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Now, you may have noticed that it's the Edinburgh International Television Festival around the corner.
You might have mentioned it once or twice.
The Media Podcast, as I said, will be there with all the best news and outrageous gossip from the sessions next week. Remember to subscribe to get it. Let's talk about our picks for the festival. Actually, you're going to go last on this one, if that's okay.
Okay.
Because I think making you choose between your children might be tough. But looking at what you've got planned, I quite like the sound of Andy Willman talking about the Grand Tour. I think that's probably a must-see. Everyone wants to know what's going on with Clarkson and Hammond and all the rest of it. Sally Wainwright talking about writing Happy Valley. That, for me, is the TV drama of the year. And you've got a session on the Friday called, and I'm paraphrasing here, Is VR a Load of Bollocks? Which, you know, I very much am interested in, because I do wonder whether the future of television really is sitting there with a virtual reality helmet on. So those are three things that I've chosen. Alex, anything catch your eye?
I think going on from the Amazon thing, I think Roy Price of actually trying to work out exactly where Amazon are and where they're pitching, because at the moment, Amazon isn't quite there when it comes. If you're looking at Amazon's direct play on Netflix, there is a comparison, but it's not a favourable comparison when it comes to Amazon. So hearing what he has to say is fascinating. Hearing Charlotte Moore, the victor of the whole BBC debacle, is fascinating, because no one quite knows, I don't think even she knows exactly what that role fully entails yet, because the BBC is going through that change until it gets a new charter, and when the new charter happens it will make more sense. But that, just the second that the questions from the audience come, or the second that she's challenged on exactly what she thinks about, well, the audience will have a million different things to ask her. That's fascinating. And of course, I think Shane Smith is a new media mogul going into old media platforms. So has Viceland launched in the UK yet?
Launches in September.
So it's a UK network that came from a skater magazine first, but, you know, a sort of in-print magazine that then took on the internet and winning due to its content partnerships, and now it's going back to TV. Like, he's obviously brilliant, but it's working out how your mind goes from here to here to here to here to here to all over the place. Yeah. It'd be fascinating to hear.
Yeah, two sessions there where it will be very interesting to sort of work out the strategy behind the people at the top. Lisa, you've mentioned a couple of sessions already, so we know who's doing the McTaggart. We've chosen our sessions. You're allowed to choose one more we haven't mentioned yet. What have we not mentioned that's worth seeing? Not the free events. I'll ask you about those in a sec.
I think Brian Singer, X-Men director, yes, in conversation with Peter Rice, the Fox chairman. That's one of the things I really like about the festival this year, that we've got amazing, you know, the greats of their particular genre in peer-to-peer conversations. So with Sally Wainwright, you've got Russell T. Davis talking to Sally Wainwright.
That was two, but I'll let you have two. But let's ask you about those free events now. This is something that I think will be really welcome to a lot of listeners to the show, because, you know, I know we have a lot of you high-ranking TV executives tuning in, but frankly, a lot of people listening to this are runners, researchers, producers, journalists. They can't afford hundreds of quid. They don't go to Edinburgh to the TV festival. They rely on us for the coverage. But if you are there in Edinburgh this year, there's stuff you can go to for free.
Yeah, and that's something I'm really passionate about, is making the festival feel accessible to the next generation, essentially. And we've got lots of really loyal, very senior people. But, you know, I want to support the next generation coming through. I want them to feel inspired and perhaps think about a job in TV, you know, members of the public who hadn't considered it before. So we've got things like the McTaggart, for the first time in its 41-year history, is going to be open to the public, and that's at the Playhouse Theatre in Edinburgh. So I do think sparks will fly with Shane Smith, and I think that's going to be worth watching. And then, as I said, Sharon Horgan, I think this will be absolutely unmissable. You've got Frankie Boyle and Sharon Horgan in a head-to-head talking about breaking the boundaries of comedy. You know, the comedy bit for them should be a risky genre. They're going to talk about failed projects. They're going to talk about how things get through. They're talking about commissioning. I think it'll be controversial, and again, fireworks, I think.
And free screenings as well.
Yeah, so you can buy tickets to that. So that's in the convention centre. And then the screenings are taking place in the Film House. Red Dwarf, we've got Craig Charles and creators Doug Naylor and Robert Llewellyn.
This is the new series of Red Dwarf. You're not just
the
showing
new
old
series.
Ones from the
80s, yes, no, yeah. No, and I think that's kind of testament to the festival, really, that the broadcasters are now deciding to show great new hit shows as exclusive premieres there. So we've got Red Dwarf. We've got Kevin Bishop with the new Porridge, the new series of much loved series like Pole Dark and The Fall, and Ronald D. Moore doing a sci-fi masterclass with Star Trek and Outlander.
Okay, that's more than enough. We'll stick the links to all of that and for tickets for those cheaper or free events on our site, themediapodcast.com. Just check out the show notes for this podcast. Right, let's cover some of the other stories doing the rounds this week. The entertainment union BECTU has criticised Project Diamond. That's the TV industry's new scheme to monitor diversity in programme making. Lisa, without reference to your session on diversity, tell us about this story.
Well, Project Diamond is a very ambitious new monitoring scheme. So the idea is that you're going to be able to get the figures from all the broadcasters as to exactly the makeup of their on-screen talent and behind the scenes, and so that we can see just how diverse the industry really is. There hasn't been a benchmarking system like this, and it has been an absolute nightmare to get through. I mean, we were supposed to do something last year at Edinburgh and unable to, because it's just been rumbling on and trying to get agreement and Data Protection Act issues. It's finally being launched, but BECTU now have problems with it, or have done for some time, because they don't feel it's transparent enough. They want every single programme to be reported. Which is difficult because clearly there are thousands and thousands of hours. And what the CDN have been trying to do is work with the broadcasters to get the data on specific genre. And I think it's right, actually. I think if we just keep going and trying to get it absolutely perfect, it will just never happen. I think we start it, launch it, and then see what improvements you can make. So I totally get, you know, Bechtu's point, and we have to be as transparent as possible. But I also feel quite alarmed that they're encouraging members to boycott this and not to fill in the data, because that's just not going to help. You know, I really just think I'd like to see everyone trying to work together and work through the problems.
Another telly story, a big shout out to former Factual boss Emma Swain, who leaves the BBC after 20 years at the corporation. Lisa, give us a sense of some of her success at the Beeb and whether her departure is going to leave a gap.
Well, she was there for 20 years. She joined in the Factual role, and she was behind some really, you know, biggest landmark series for the BBC: Lambing Live, Don't Tell the Bride, Stargazing, Bake Off. She most recently has been Director of Future Commissioning, Channels and Online, which I think for some felt like a bit of a W1A role, a bit kind of Director of Better.
Yeah.
Not least because one of her tasks was to predict the kind of content the BBC should be commissioning in 5 years' time. I think for anyone to have a five-year plan these days is completely crazy. And in fact, Emma's also presided over a period of massive change within that Factual department. It's been a really turbulent department. There's been lots of departures, and I'm, you know, it's now in good shape, I think, with Alison Kirkham heading that up. I think that's a strong pair of hands. It's a really important department. It's had issues with commissioning. It was something that the former director of television, Danny Cohen, echoed some research on the commissioning survey that broadcasted, which was, you know, pointing out the lack of respect, really, I think, for producers, meetings being cancelled, and the factual team were singled out as one of the worst to deal with. In fact, the rudest commissioners of all were the ones at the BBC. So they've tried to rectify that. They've tried to really sort of restructure that department, and I think the changes are still going on.
But actually, I mean, it's really interesting when you talk about, you know, what shows should the BBC be commissioning in 5 years' time. From a factual point of view, Alex, actually, when you look at the things, the very subjects that Lisa just mentioned there, you know, Stargazing, Lambing Live, Bake Off, I mean, cooking, nature, you know, astronomy.
Brave New World.
I mean, that is the TV schedule of the 70s, isn't it? It's just a case of doing these shows in a new way, and actually that's all we want from the BBC, isn't it? Delivering that in a quality way.
I agree with you, and I think the BBC still makes the most brilliant television programmes. It's just that you're still thinking about a 42-inch screen, and you're not thinking about the performance and the engagement and the real discussion around a programme. You're still making a broadcast rather than engaging in discussion, and that's been a tricky thing for the BBC. So when you commission a series now, someone tried to commission an app for a one-off programme at the BBC. Why? For what possible reason would that make sense? Just use Facebook. And it's upskilling the BBC executives to understand that I think there can be a five-year plan. I don't think it can be precise, but I think you know where the internet will be broadly in 5 years' time. Like, the BBC has campaigned to be on Snapchat, and there's all manner of trust issues about the BBC being let anywhere near Snapchat. Sources close to the matter have let me know. So there can be a five-year plan, and the BBC still needs to make the best TV, and that's not going to change a great deal in 5 years' time. It's still going to be proper factual stuff. It's still going to be investigations. It's still going to be nature. It's still going to be food. It's still going to be brilliant programming, but it's how you commission around that.
Okay, don't worry. The media quiz is on its way. One last story, though. Univision has bought Gawker Media, the troubled gossip website that went bankrupt after a libel action brought by Hulk Hogan. Alex, it is actually to this podcast's eternal shame that we didn't cover the Hogan trial in much depth at all. We kind of ignored it, and now we have a big decision about it. So can you recap to us what happened over the last year?
I'll start from the very, very beginning with Gawker. So Gawker, for those who don't know, is a site which kind of sells itself on the sensational. It goes further and goes harder than traditional medias would feel okay with, and so they decided that it was appropriate for them to publish the sexuality of investor and tech startup man Peter Thiel, which, you know, is utterly irrelevant because the fact that the man has a sexuality is irrelevant. So this obviously angered the man who is worth, what, $2.7 billion. And then they thought it would be a great idea to publish Hulk Hogan's sex tape. Once again, there are discussions to be had about the news worth of that. There is very little public interest, as the court found. Then Hulk Hogan, with the help of Peter Thiel, set up a legal case to cost them $115 million.
Yeah. And a lot of the speculation has been about who contacted who in that scenario.
I'm not even going to... I don't think there is no correct answer in that, because I think they both had it out for Gawker for similar reasons, and the fact that they came together to bankrupt Gawker. So Gawker has since, I think it's just been sold, or in the process of being sold, for $135 million. So there is still a lot of worth in it, but just with a single story, you have cost your entire organisation. And it just shows, when you are publishing something that dangerous, like, we put a call into the lawyers, and if the lawyers say high risk, we start thinking heavily. I dread to think the sort of conversations that happen before you put Hulk Hogan's sex tape online.
And actually, there's a danger there, isn't there, in that, as you say, the brand is about pushing the content as far as it will go. So you are in dangerous territory as soon as that's your brand and you're not WikiLeaks.
But in that conversation, where is the public interest in knowing that Hulk Hogan has sex? I didn't know that Hulk Hogan has sex. I think the public need to know that Hulk Hogan has a body, has a penis, and does use it for intercourse. I think the people of the world need to see that. Not just pictures, video. That's what they need.
Lisa, tell us about Univision, because I'd be honest, I'd not really heard of them. I know they're a massive global company, but of course they own lots of things, including The Onion now.
I think it just goes back to everything we've been talking about for the whole of this, is reaching millennials. That's exactly why they're doing this. That's what every major established media company is trying to do, and that's whether you're home growing your content or whether you're buying companies like Gawker Media and The Onion. So you know, it totally makes sense. It's just about how that fits within the stable, and as you say, the brand ethos and how far you can push it, you know, within this new ownership will be interesting to see. But hopefully they will have better news judgment than they've had up to now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, just time for our media quiz. This week it's entitled Escape from the Atlantis That Is Linear Broadcasting. We all know about the coming Digigeddon, a time when the broadcast landscape sinks into an online world with chaos and uncertainty for the creative industries. It is now being celebrated in this brand new board game to be released by the Media Podcast. I have an early edition of the board game for you to try. Here's the map of the media landscape. You can see the big British castle over here and the continent of Murdoch. The rules are very simple. The counters in front of you are programmes from TV and radio that have been axed this week. Your job, player, is to roll the dice and decide which digital saviour to move them to. The winner is Claire Balding, the loser John Inverdale. Lisa, you're first. Let's play Escape from the Atlantis That Is Linear Broadcasting. Roll that dice. Oh, it's come up, the non-league show. Who's axed it? What's its digital saviour?
I know this. It's been axed from BBC Five Live.
Ting.
And it's going to Audioboom.
Correct. Why?
The BBC didn't recommission it for some reason.
Which is bizarre, right? I mean, it's a show about football that's fronted by a woman, and it's about football that isn't the Premiership, and that's the kind of thing the BBC should be doing, isn't it?
Yes.
But it's been around for about 5 years and then on BBC Radio London for 4 or something. Yeah. So maybe they just think, what are they replacing it with? Maybe there's a bright, shiny new show and they're going to support new talent and they've
Love
helped
the idea
this along
they
the way.
Just looked at Premiership football as well. We're like, yes, a bit tired now. Yes. I've been doing this for 40 years.
I've no idea.
People
no.
are bored. Alex, your role, why has Channel 4 sitcom Raised by Wolves been axed and who is its digital saviour?
It's been axed because no one watched it, isn't it? Caitlin Moran says it's because of Bowie and Brexit. That's the reasons that she gave. It's not quite had the, like, I haven't watched it. It's the resonance. It lacks the resonance that, like, Caitlin Moran. Anything she says, you're like, oh my god, that's amazing. That program, meh.
So what she's done is she's encouraged fans to sign up on her Facebook page to move the show to a new home unspecified. I wonder if that actually is Facebook.
Netflix will pay for it, Amazon will pay for it, Facebook is paying a lot for content, but I don't think it quite... Is that the right answer? Have you tried to hint at me?
No.
There is no right answer.
Yeah, she hasn't announced yet what she's going to do. She's got very exciting plans, apparently, behind the scenes, if the fans want it back. So it is down to, you know, whether there's an appetite for it.
But it's interesting to demonstrate that just with how many likes a post by Caitlin Moran gets, because that doesn't actually mean anything, does it? As we were saying earlier about video views.
Mm.
You know, it's clickbait. Oh, my show's been axed. All her fans are going to say like. That doesn't mean they're going to then watch it.
Facebook, what happens if Facebook gets into programming? Like, so it's already tried. So CNN do quite a bit of stuff. BuzzFeed are being, rumour has it, paid quite a large sum of money to produce live content. If they produce programmes that begin their air date at 8 p.m, you know, Twitter's doing NFL games now. Or is it baseball or is it NFL or is it both? I forget.
Something American.
Xenophobia
hockey.
On the media.
I'm not interested in sport. I'm even less interested in
America. It did get 1.2 million, I think, for this last series, and 1.4. So it's not total disaster. And comedy is, you know, famously difficult genre. And, you know, Peep Show took, what, 5 series before it got off the ground. So, you know, there is an argument that comedy needs time to grow. And I do think she's got an important point to make about, you know, working class comedy, that you just, you know, she's really sort of championing it on that point, that it's a unique sort of voice, really, and it shouldn't be. And I think Ralph Little actually wrote a great blog when Caroline Ahern died and said, you know, and with Victoria Wood as well, you know, where are the especially female northern working class voices in comedy? You know,
they're
just
not
getting
seen Mrs. Brown's Boys.
So then, why
is she a woman, really?
Wow. Why do you think it was decommissioned then? If it's this thing that, you know, that rating wise Channel 4 isn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, that's kind of okay, and it is this thing that isn't elsewhere, why then was it decommissioned?
It's expensive, isn't it? Comedy's expensive. You can't do okay when it costs that much. Isn't it just that? I mean, a panel show's cheaper, right?
Yeah, or, you know, I guess the commissioners have to believe in the show as much as Caitlin Moran does. And, you know, if they've obviously weighed it up and thought, is it going to build? Is it going to grow? It has declined since the last series, and maybe they see it's potentially on a downward trend. Yeah, who knows? But, I mean, interesting to see if she's successful or not.
Good. I'm glad that you ended it with a slightly negative note there, because I want that to be bait for Kenton Allen to come back on the show. Kenton,
right.
If you're listening, come back and tell us why it's been axed. Right, here's the third question. It's a tie in a way that isn't
in any way artificial or forced.
Yeah, so it's who buzzes in first with this roll of the dice in our exciting board game, which I've forgotten the name of. Here it is. Vice's video series Rule Britannia. Why has it been axed? Hasn't really. And what's its digital saviour? Fairly obvious. Who buzzes in first?
I should know this, shouldn't I? This is so embarrassing.
It's a trick question, therefore the winner can be a tie, because actually it's moving from digital to linear.
Okay, so it's launching on Viceland,
yes.
The TV channel,
yes.
Which is launching in the UK in
Correct.
Mid-September on Sky.
Good. Yes, they've announced their first shows for the launch in September. Big Night Out, where Clive Martin explores underground party scenes across Europe. Hate for Beginners, with Jamali Maddox befriending extremists in order to better understand them, it says here. And an exploration of global tattoo culture, hosted by Grace Neutral, with the working title of Needles and Pins. Alex, are you going to be tuning in?
We're going back to the earlier thing about video views. It's somehow a view of a thing is worth more if it's on a television than it is on the internet. It's going to be relatively similar content. Like, Big Night Out is pretty funny. I hate enjoying it, but it is brilliant. It's genuinely good. And Rule Britannia has continually pushed the boundaries. Election 2010, they did wonderful coverage with Rule Britannia of young candidates. So, yes, I'll be watching it, but purely for a voyeurism and then see if it actually delivers in the format of TV where before it was just online.
Question. Young people, Sky. Connect those two things together. Why isn't it on Freeview and Virgin as well?
Why is it on TV if you want to hit young people?
Sure, like, but I mean, Sky in particular is actually a premium service that I imagine skews older, doesn't it?
Great question for Jay Hunt to ask.
Yeah, there you are. You can file that one away. Well, that's it for our show today. One of you won. My thanks to Lisa Campbell and Alex Hudson. Subscribe to us, fans, for free right now on your podcast app of choice, and you will get next week's media podcast Edinburgh TV special before your train leaves Waverley or your yacht leaves Leith. Delete as appropriate. And now you're up to date with us. Why not get inspired by listening to the latest episode of Media Masters? Chris Wright, the guest this week. Great listen. And thank you to them again. The Media Podcast is a PPM production. My producer is Matt Hill. I've been Ollie Mann. Until next time, bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.